Good mornings, I'm Chris Oakes, and coming up today, March is National Craft Month. We'll talk about how unleashing kids' creativity and imagination in the classroom and at home can inspire and promote a love of learning and innovation like nothing else. Also this morning for World Bipolar Day on Saturday, despite the fact that we are more open about mental health issues these days, still less than 10% of patients are getting effective treatment. And we have a special collection of recipes for Easter from Kyra's Kitchen. This is the Good Mornings Podcast Edition for Friday, March 29th, 2024. Once again this morning, I'm a little rough, my voice is. It's voice under construction for the third day in a row. This actually started with, my throat was feeling a little scratchy on Tuesday. And then for the rest of the week, I've been battling this touch of laryngitis on and off again. Been very phlegmy and yeah. So anyway, we'll see if we can muddle through and finish out the week this morning. But my apologies if I sound a little scratchy this morning. By the way, speaking of Tuesday, my wife and I went out on Tuesday evening to Texas Roadhouse to have dinner and help support the cause. They were doing that big benefit at like a dozen Texas Roadhouse locations across Ohio to benefit the Tornado Relief Fund at Indian Lake, the Dine to Donate event. Location in Findlay participated, Lima, Alliance, Athens, Chillicothe, Fairborn, Grove City, Hilliard, Huber Heights, Lancaster, Mansfield, Marysville, New Philadelphia, Newark, Polaris, Reynoldsburg, Springfield, Stowe, Troy, and Zanesville. So a lot of restaurants donating 100% of their profits from Tuesday's sales to the United Way of Logan County and their Tornado Relief Fund for the victims of the Indian Lake tornado. And I was told by a friend of mine on Facebook that at some locations, I believe the Lima location was one of these, they had so many people, they were actually seating people after closing time. They were actually seating people after closing time in some at some of those locations. And so kudos to the people who waited that long, first of all, and to the employees for sticking around to make sure that everybody who wanted to dine to donate got the chance to do so. Total amount that they raised, and this is the reason I bring it up, the company has announced that they raised $54,600. For the Tornado Relief Fund, $54,600. So kudos all the way around. That is awesome. Let's see. Big news yesterday. I don't know if you heard about this. Punxsutawney Phil is a daddy. That's right. The Groundhog Club of Punxsutawney, Pennsylvania says Phil and his wife Phyllis have given birth to twin babies and everybody's healthy. The babies are with their parents at the zoo inside the Punxsutawney Memorial Library. I don't know, to call it a zoo is maybe a little generous. It's kind of a groundhog enclosure. Yeah, if you go to Punxsutawney, Pennsylvania, if you visit any other day other than Groundhog Day, you can view Phil and apparently his wife and now his kids at the local library. Which is where he hangs out during the rest of the year. The names of the new babies have not been announced, but I would imagine at least one of them would have to be Phil Jr., wouldn't it? I don't know. And I don't know whether they're boys or girls, but Punxsutawney Phil is a dad. Big, big news. Speaking of animals, I thought this was kind of interesting, closer to home. A gorilla born by C-section at the zoo in Fort Worth back in January is now with her new foster mom in Cleveland. She arrived at the Cleveland Metro Park Zoo Wednesday afternoon, and the introduction of baby Jamila to the ape that will hopefully act as her foster mom is said to have gone well. Baby Jamila was rejected by her birth mother because of the way she was born. She was born by C-section rather than naturally, and so those parenting instincts didn't kick in for Jamila's natural mother. Two attempts to form a foster mother bond in Fort Worth failed, and so the baby gorilla has been shipped off to Cleveland. Freddie, the mom that will hopefully foster baby Jamila, Freddie is the oldest gorilla and the dominant female in the Cleveland troop. Not only has Freddie acted as a foster mother before, she has also had seven offspring of her own. Cleveland Metro Park Zoo is considered one of the top zoos for gorilla research, and that's why the folks at Fort Worth reached out to Cleveland to see if they could come up with a plan to, because otherwise the baby gorilla might have died. So that's really cool news. A couple of other items here. Among the first things you need to know, the most interesting and buzzworthy stories of the day, another AI story here in the news. An artificial intelligence created influencer will soon host a segment on Spain's version of the TV show Survivor. Alba Renai has already become an Instagram celebrity. And she's not a real person. She's not a real person. She's AI generated and is already an Instagram celebrity. She was created based on the results of a focus group. She has long, light brown hair and brown eyes, and recently shared the news on Instagram that she will be sharing exclusive content on the Survivor contestants as part of Spain's version of that TV show. Some of her fans congratulated her in the comments, and it is important to note, I thought this was interesting, that the company behind Alba says she did not take anyone's job. It's not like she replaced a human co-host on the program. In fact, she created more than two dozen jobs because it takes a team of 32 people to work on the Alba project and bring it to life. So I know that's the reason I thought it was kind of an interesting story, because we know that the narrative is that AI is going to replace all of us humans, that is going to take all of our jobs. Well, in this case anyway, 32 people work on the Alba project. So, no, I'm sure as the technology matures, it will take fewer and fewer people to bring Alba to life, but you get the idea that it's not replacing anyone. And of course, we are a little more than a week away from the eclipse. And what better way to celebrate the upcoming eclipse than with a free burger? That is exactly what Burger King has cooked up. It is a deal to commemorate the astronomical event on April 8th, a free Whopper for those with the BK app. If you are a Royal Perk member, just text ECLIPSE to 251251 on April 8th and then order in the app or online to redeem your free Whopper. Now, even though the eclipse will only last for a few minutes, the free burger deal is good for the entire day. And I saw that and I thought, I'm not surprised that company is trying to cash in, tying into the eclipse that everybody is talking about. But that kind of goes against what all the authorities are telling us to just stay at home and not clog the roads. There are going to be enough people on the roads. Traffic's already going to be a nightmare. The idea that you would be heading out to get your free Whopper at Burger King is probably not going to sit well with those who are trying to keep the roads clear. But there you go. Some of the most interesting and buzzworthy stories to get your Friday morning started.
WFIN News, I'm Matt Demchek. Your WTOL 11 weather. Plenty of sunshine expected today with a high in the mid-50s. Partly cloudy tonight, a low around 40. The Fostoria Fire Department held an active shooter victim evacuation drill at the junior-senior high school. Captain Reinhardt says some students volunteered to simulate victims to make the drill as realistic as possible for the firefighters.
They're going to be trying to fight them a little bit, you know, because they're going to try to create the most realistic scenario that we can do and try to give the medics and the rescue task force people a little bit of stress so that they're not just coming in and throwing a tourniquet on a mannequin.
Get more of our conversation with Captain Reinhardt and see some video of the active shooter victim evacuation drill in this story on our website. Ohio U.S. Senator Sherrod Brown is urging President Biden to stop the sale of U.S. steel to a company in Japan.
Senator Brown and the CEO of Cleveland-based steel manufacturer Cleveland-Cliffs allege that the sale of U.S. steel to Nippon Steel would be bad for American steelworkers. Brown toured the Cleveland-Cliffs steel mill and met with steelworkers there, and he claims that Nippon would ignore the voices of the workers.
ONN's Isabel Lawrence reporting. Hancock County Sheriff's Office Jail Administrator Captain Ryan Kidwell is retiring. He's been with the Sheriff's Office for more than 32 years and jail administrator since 2006. Ryan says he's had a lot of great colleagues over the years.
I am so grateful for all that I've been able to serve with. The trust, respect, support has just, it has been second to none.
Get more of our conversation with Captain Kidwell from his retirement party and the story on our website. You can join the Hancock Park District for a solar eclipse preview event on Monday. It'll be held at Oakwoods Nature Preserve Discovery Center at 7 p.m. Participants will view what will happen during the eclipse and learn about other astronomical objects they may be seeing during the eclipse. Get more information on the event and the story on our website. And remember, you can always get more news online anytime at WFIN.com.
Well, March is National Craft Month, and crafting goes beyond just, you know, decorations and gifts and pretty things for around the house. It empowers educators and parents to personalize learning environments, inspire student innovation, and create a love for learning through projects and custom creations. And joining us this morning is award-winning blogger, former teacher, the founder of TechSavvyMama.com, and crafting enthusiast, Letitia Barr. Letitia, it may seem odd at first glance to have someone so into technology as you are talking about crafting, because you might think of that as a decidedly low-tech hobby, but you say there are many reasons or many ways in which this resonates educationally with our kids. Explain.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, crafting isn't just about cute decorations. There's a surprising link to STEM, science, technology, engineering, and math. And if you think about crafts, they often involve building things like model rockets or simple machines. And these are a great way to introduce kids to engineering basics in a fun, hands-on way. Plus, crafting is all about experimentation. If you think about it, trying new materials, techniques, and figuring out how to make designs work, this experimentation is a critical part of the engineering design process. So as a teacher who used to teach middle school computer science and engineering, I used to always tell my engineering students and even my computer science students, like, it's okay to not get something right the first time. I actually want you to try it and then build it better by figuring out how to use materials in a different way or how you could use a different technique to make it better. So these are all skills that kids are developing. Like if you think about science class, kids are learning critical thinking and problem solving skills. These are all essential for success in STEM fields. And kids are learning through crafting without even really realizing it.
Yeah, there is certainly a good point that there's a lot of creativity involved in the sciences. And then, of course, these days, certainly crafting itself can be high tech in many respects.
Absolutely. So for teachers, you can truly transform your classroom by ditching the lectures and bringing crafting into the mix. So imagine, if you will, students unleashing their creativity by designing their own project within Design Space apps. These are ready to be brought to life with the help of teachers and the Cricut Joy Extra. The small but mighty machine lets them design their own stuff, think organizers for their schoolwork, cool decorations for projects. They can even whip up model parts with it. So that's a great integration of crafting and technology. In addition, there's an app called the Cricut Design Space that's perfect for unleashing creativity right from your phone, tablet, digital device. And the best part is, it's so easy to use. Students and kids pick it up so quickly. And like I always like to caution parents and teachers, it's always a smart move to have an adult around for any crafting adventures, just because we want kids to be learning safely through their crafting center.
No question about that. And just to, just to kind of interject in here, as you're talking about that, I'm thinking in the back of my mind, that is a perfect way to introduce kids that may be, I don't know, skeptical or may think that crafting is not something that they would be interested in. But if you can incorporate that tech, well, then, you know, now you've maybe really got something.
Absolutely. As teachers, we know that kids learn in different ways. So you want to provide different learning experiences. Some kids learn through paper and pencil. Other kids are more auditory or visual learners. And other kids, like my son, who's a high school senior, he learns by doing. He's a natural engineer, and he's actually going to study mechanical engineering in college next year. But he loves hands-on learning. And for him and other kids like him, it's that hands-on learning that provides a really rich learning experience through crafting. And for teachers who might think like, oh, this seems like too much, Cricut has a built-out portal just for teachers that provides valuable resources and inspiration. And this portal really elevates your classroom crafting experience. I love their print then cut feature. Teachers can seamlessly incorporate their own designs and printables into projects. There are just so many exciting things you can do with crafting and technology with the Cricut Joy Extra in your classroom learning environment.
Now, we talk about how we can apply this in the classroom, speaking to teachers. What about at home? What kind of crafting activities would you recommend for families in the home setting?
Sure. Well, I think we can all remember what it was like to learn with flashcards and using those standard 3x5 index cards to learn. Multiplication facts, spelling words, you know, history facts, things like that. Well, the Cricut Joy Extra can absolutely be used to make flashcards that help personalize kids' learning. So using the Cricut Joy Extra, make a set of flashcards that are fun, motivating, and far more personal than old school index cards. One great way to have your kids learn is to have them create flashcards with the Cricut Joy Extra alongside you, because they're learning by making, and then they can use those flashcards as a learning tool themselves. Cricut, you can make some super cute bookmarks. I have some here with me today on my desk, you know, with kids' names on them, with their favorite animals. I have a dog one and a unicorn one. They're just darling. So those are great to motivate young readers. And then personally, as a parent, I love any craft that helps our family with organization. So when my kids were young and in preschool, before they could read, they chose their favorite color and had their backpack and their lunchbox. And then as they got older, their binders, folders, and things like that. That same color was a great organizational tool because they knew that, you know, my daughter had a red backpack, a red lunchbox, and then later a red binder. Those were all of her things that needed to go in her backpack with her to school. So from a young age, she was learning those organizational tips that carry forward as executive functioning skills that kids need as they get older into adulthood. But Cricut was certainly a great way to personalize my family's organizational supplies.
Again, as we mentioned, March is National Craft Month, talking about all the ways that we can incorporate crafting into the educational experience in the classroom and at home. And then, of course, you know, there's nothing wrong with just crafting because it can be fun and an enjoyable thing to do. So let's not forget about that as well. Again, the Tech Savvy Mama, crafting enthusiast and former teacher Leticia Barr is with us this morning. Where do we get more ideas, more of what you're talking about here?
Sure. Well, for more information and crafting tips and ideas, I recommend going to www.cricut.com. And for educators, definitely check out the teacher's portal. It is a treasure trove of ideas that can increase hands-on project-based learning to motivate students in your classroom.
Leticia, thanks very much for taking the time. We appreciate it.
Thanks so much for having me today. I appreciate it. Have a great day.
Well, if you didn't already know this, tomorrow marks World Bipolar Day to increase awareness and education and eliminate the stigma often associated with one of the most complex mental health conditions. Dr. Gustavo Alva is a psychiatrist certified by the American Board of Psychiatry and Neurology. And Dr. Alva, let me ask you this, first of all, just in kind of a general sense. We have come a long way in how open we are about mental illness, how we talk about it, and how we treat it. But still, the statistic is that less than 10% of patients who have a mental disorder receives effective treatment. Why is that, do you think?
Well, again, it's tied in with stigma. And one of the things that we're doing right now through having something like World Bipolar Day is raising awareness and educating individuals with the aim of eradicating a biased perspective, a jaundiced view of mental conditions, including bipolar 1 disorder.
So it's interesting, even though we are more comfortable talking about it, there's still so much that we don't really understand and still a lot of misinformation floating around out there. So as we mentioned, World Bipolar Day coming up, and this is one of the most complex issues to deal with. I'm told specifically bipolar 1 is the more common and often more severe form of the disorder, correct?
That is correct. With bipolar 1 disorder, or BP1, we're talking about a recurrent lifelong mood disorder that results in functional and cognitive impairment. You know, just looking at statistics, there's 4.8 million American adults that are living with bipolar 1 disorder, which is why it's so critical to foster an open dialogue surrounding this condition to eradicate stigma and empower those individuals to seek out appropriate care through their healthcare professional.
So it follows, and again, this is just more kind of informational, so I can kind of wrap my head around this here. It follows that if there is a bipolar 1, then there must be at least a bipolar 2. What are the differences that distinguish between different designations?
You're right. There's a bipolar 1 and a bipolar 2. Bipolar 2 is a little lighter in that, again, the recurrent depressive episodes don't necessarily include mania. With bipolar 1 disorder, there are manic episodes. That means that there are periods in which you've got at least 1 week, if not longer. So these periods may last weeks or even months. Whereas with bipolar 2, you've got a condition called hypomania, where individuals don't experience the same degree of intensity of an upheaval of the emotional state. And that will last typically maybe 4 days, but less than a week.
So obviously both are serious and both are important, but specifically with respect to bipolar 1, because that is, as we said, the more complex and the more serious and more common form of the disorder. What are some of the signs that individuals should be watching for?
Well, definitely intense periods of emotions and changes in sleep patterns as well as activity levels, all of which can negatively impact that individual's day-to-day functioning. So, you know, there is a flip-flop or an oscillation of the mood state where people are having recurrent manic and depressive episodes lasting weeks or even months.
What are some of the challenges that you encounter in treating bipolar disorder, particularly BP1?
Well, that's a great point, because about half of those diagnosed with a mental disorder have issues with their long-term treatment plans. And considering that 90% of people with bipolar disorder will experience recurrences during their lifetime, it's not a bad idea to identify a long-term treatment plan.
And what options, what treatment options are available to patients who are diagnosed with this condition?
Well, there's no one-size-fits-all approach. That means then that we have to focus on what's going to work best for our patient. And patients, by the way, should feel empowered to ask questions and work with their doctor to find a treatment option that's going to be the best fit for them. For example, in my practice, I've found that long-acting injectables or LAIs can be very beneficial in managing bipolar 1 disorder in patients who are already stable. However, if a patient doesn't know that that treatment option is available, how are they to ask for this?
It actually kind of circles back to the question we started. We mentioned the statistic that less than 10% of patients who have a mental disorder receive effective treatment. It doesn't say that they're receiving treatment, just effective treatment. So I wonder how many are actually receiving a treatment that is not as effective as it should be.
Exactly. And that's why speaking with one's healthcare provider is probably the first best step in figuring out what's going to help them out. There's a great resource online, however, called learnmorebp1.com, where individuals can seek out more information. Again, learnmorebp1.com.
So it's especially an important message for individuals who may be dealing with these issues personally. What is the broader message to the rest of us who may have a friend, a coworker, maybe a family member who is struggling with these issues?
Well, just being empowered with additional education and awareness. And through that, recognizing that bipolar 1 disorder is a medical condition that can readily be treated. But the important thing is that if people don't know the options that are out there for them, well, we should definitely encourage them to have that, you know, clear and open dialogue with their healthcare provider so as to be able to eke out the best potential benefit for them.
Again, Dr. Gustavo Alva is certified at the American Board of Psychiatry and Neurology. World Bipolar Day coming up. As we mentioned, the best source of information is going to be your doctor, certainly, for your specific circumstances and your specific situation. But that being said, as you mentioned, Dr. Alva, there are some resources online for just general information. Let's mention that website again.
Thank you, Chris. Learnmorebp1.com.
And we will link that up on our webpage as well. Dr. Alva, thanks very much for taking the time. We appreciate it.
Appreciate your time, Chris. Have a phenomenal rest of the day. Thank you.
This is Good Mornings with Chris Oakes on 1330 WFIN, WFIN.com, and 95.5 FM.
We interrupt this program to bring you a broken news alert.
Don't do this. Story we lead off the broken news with this morning comes from Anaheim, California, where a popular attraction at Disneyland had to be shut down after somebody scattered human cremated remains at the Rise of the Resistance attraction, the popular Star Wars themed area of the park. They scattered someone's cremated ashes in and around the attraction. They had to shut it down. Cast members were called in to clean up the mess. And apparently this is not the first time that this has happened at Disneyland. Guests have also chosen to try and spread the ashes of their loved ones at the It's a Small World ride, on the Pirates of the Caribbean ride, and at the Haunted Mansion attraction. Don't do that! Come on! I get it. I understand. I understand what the attraction would be. I don't know whether this would be considered hazardous, you know, whether it be, you know, biohazard. I mean, they're not body parts so much. They're ashes. But still, ew! Maybe what Disneyland could do would be come up with a crypt at the Haunted Mansion, where if you want to leave your loved one's ashes at the park, they could actually come up with a crypt at the Haunted Mansion. At least that would be, you know, would go along with the theming of the attraction. But still, don't do that, man. Also in the broken news this morning, good news here, nobody was injured after a 9-year-old boy crashed a car into a California Highway Patrol officer's patrol car. Happened in Oroville, California. The boy was trying to drive himself to school in his mother's car on Wednesday morning. Apparently, he did not tell her that he had taken the car to drive himself to school. Again, remember, 9 years old. California Highway Patrol says an officer spotted a sedan, stopped oddly in the middle of an intersection, and told the driver to move. But the driver suddenly took off, leading the officer on a short and erratic chase that came to an end in a dirt parking lot near Plumas Avenue Elementary School. So at least he got to school. After stopping, the boy threw the car in reverse, backing directly into the patrol car, causing minor damage to both vehicles. He was given a stern talking to, but he was later sent to school. So, wow. 9 years old. What would possess a nine-year-old to take mom's car and think you could drive to school on your own? I don't know. That's just bizarre. Let's see. Always have to have something out of Florida, and this comes from Palm Coast, Florida, where a woman accused of shoplifting was arrested after allegedly stealing items from the Palm Coast Walmart. Amber McCann, when asked what she thought she was doing, had an interesting excuse. She claims that she was playing a game called 21, where someone grabs store merchandise and tries to leave without being caught. I wasn't shoplifting, officer. It was all a game. it's probably germane to the story to mention that deputies also found marijuana, meth, and several empty baggies in the car she was driving. She was booked into the Flagler County Jail. So did she win or did she lose the game? I'm guessing she lost. Nothing to see here. It's just a game. We're not stealing. We're just playing a game. Yeah. Now, this is all kinds of weird. Maybe this is more bizarre than whoever was scattering their loved one's ashes at Disneyland. The Harvard Library, one of the most prestigious libraries in America and even the world. The Harvard Library, after careful consideration, has decided to remove the binding from one of its books. It seems the binding of Arsène Houssay's 19th century book, Des Destinées de l'Âme, which translates to Destinies of the Soul. I probably mispronounced that. It's been a long time since my high school French class, but it's a French novelist, and the binding of the book is made from the skin of a deceased woman. Ugh. The book has been in the library's collection since 1934. And according to a statement on the Harvard Library website, the university concluded that the human remains used in the book's binding no longer belong in the Harvard Library collections due to the ethically fraught nature of the book's origins and subsequent history. My question is, when did they belong in the... When did this belong in the... It's been in their collection since 1934. Nobody thought to raise some questions earlier? Why did it take, 90 years to actually get this done? That is weird. And finally, in the broken news this morning, the woman who purchased what she considered the perfect piece of land in Hawaii to host her meditative healing women's retreats recently discovered that someone built a $500,000 home on her property by mistake. while Ann Reynolds waited out the COVID-19 pandemic in California for the right time to utilize the property, she bought it before the pandemic and then couldn't go out there to do anything with it. During that time, a construction company mistakenly bulldozed the lot and built a 3-bedroom, 2-bath house worth about $500,000 on the plot of land. Ms. Reynolds doesn't want the house, which is vacant and has caused issues, like now her tax bill has gone up. She's also had to deal with squatters and now a lawsuit against the landowner because of someone else's mistake. She's facing a lawsuit because of somebody else's mistake. The developers tried to settle the issue by offering to swap Reynolds their lot right next door or to sell her the house at a discount. But she refused both offers. It would set a dangerous precedent if you could go onto someone else's land, she says, build anything you want, and then sue that individual for the value of it. With fingers being pointed at in every direction, the developer tells local news reporters he's pulled everyone into the lawsuit and hopes a judge can sort out the $500,000 mistake. Wow. Can you imagine buying a piece of land and then finding out that someone else built a $500,000 home on it. Wow. That's crazy. How does that even happen? There you go. That is today's Broken News Report, an update on the odd and unusual side of the headlines. We now return you to your regularly scheduled programming.
Take WFIN wherever you go with our updated mobile app for iPhone and Android. And now you can listen to us on your Alexa device. Get the app at WFIN.com or in the App Store or Google Play. Plus, enable Alexa by searching for WFIN under Skills, and you'll soon be saying, Alexa, play 1330 WFIN. And the best part is the apps and skills are absolutely free. On the air at 1330 WFIN and 95.5 FM. Online at WFIN.com and on your smartphone, tablet, and Alexa devices.
Time now for your daily download, the numbers behind the news and the statistics that shape our lives. So what is the most affordable state in the U.S., the most affordable state in which to live? According to a recent report from USA Today Homefront, the designation of most affordable state, according to their report, takes multiple factors into consideration to rank the 50 states in D.C. based on the overall cost of living. So what they did is they factored in money spent on groceries, gas, taxes, housing, and healthcare, the necessities. The study shows that Utah is the most affordable state in the U.S. They compare all of those average costs versus the statewide median income, and the state of Utah spends 63.3% of their income on those necessities, leaving, of course, the most of any state, most left over for discretionary spending. So the bottom of the list, the most expensive place, and this is not a surprise, New York, where, as opposed to 63.3% of median income spent in Utah on the necessities, 78.7% of New Yorkers' median income is spent on those same necessities. So they're at the bottom of the list. Top five, Utah, followed by Tennessee, Arizona, Nevada, which surprised me a little bit, and Washington. My son lived in Washington for a while. It's expensive to live out there, but you make more money. Most people do. The median income is much higher. So it is in the top five most affordable states. The bottom five, Oregon, Washington's neighbor to the south, Oregon, Louisiana, and then the bottom three, you could probably guess, Hawaii, California, and as we mentioned, New York. So where does Ohio rank on this list? Well, we are 11th overall, Ohio, with an average cost of those essentials, and again, they look at groceries, gas, taxes, housing, and healthcare, and Ohio ranks 11th overall. We spend, on average, $43,419 a year on those things compared to the statewide median income of $65,720 a year. I apologize, I didn't do the math, so I don't know what the percentage. You can do that yourself if you want. One of the things that I thought was interesting when the report breaks it down factor by factor. Again, we mentioned those essentials they used to calculate the cost of living, and they break it down for each factor. The only one of those that Ohio was in the top five, even though we're 11th overall, the only factor that we were in the top five of groceries, gas, taxes, housing, and healthcare was taxes. Ohio was second when it comes to taxes, most affordable. Second most affordable when it comes to taxes. Now, you may ask yourself, well, what about all of those states that have no income tax, like Florida and Texas, and there are several others, and it's been suggested that maybe Ohio should do this as well and go to become a no income tax state. Well, it's true that those states have a very low income tax burden, but other taxes, specifically property taxes, far outweigh the property taxes in states like Ohio. So overall, the tax burden in Ohio is much lower than even states with no income tax. So something to think about with respect to that and the idea of moving Ohio to a no income tax state as well. Once again, my wife Kyra has joined us in the studio this morning. With Easter right around the corner, we have a special collection of Easter-inspired recipes.
Yes.
If you want to do something a little bit different for Easter this year,
I'm going to try it. Yeah.
Dude, and I'll preface this by saying we typically do this on Easter. We don't do, I mean, I know, you know, ham is the traditional thing, right? For Easter. Thanksgiving, you've got the turkey. Christmas and Easter, you do a ham. And so, you know, Christmas, that's fine, but you get Easter come around and you want to do something maybe a little bit different. And so we've tried different things with chicken and, you know, different ham dishes and so on like that. Just things to be unique. And this uses the ham, but easy ham balls.
Yes.
So instead of, so they're like meatballs with ham.
Yeah.
Meatballs with ham.
Yeah.
Okay.
So you take 1 pound of fully cooked ham and then finely ground it with your food processor.
All right.
1 pound of ground pork, 1 cup of milk, 1 cup of crushed frosted flakes, 2 eggs lightly beaten, 1 tablespoon of ground mustard. And then for the glaze, it's 1 cup of packed brown sugar, 1/4 cup of vinegar, and 1 tablespoon of ground mustard. So preheat your oven to 350 degrees. Put the ham and pork in a bowl. Mix with your hands. Beat 2 eggs and then and add them into the beef mixture.
Just like you would for regular meatballs.
Yes.
Yeah.
So crush up your frosted flakes. Add to the milk. Let that sit for about 5 minutes and then add that to the meat mixture.
So you've got that coating there. All right.
So mix all that together. Then form into little meatballs. Place in a baking dish. I usually put mine on my cookie sheet. Prepare the glaze by heating up the glazed ingredients until simmering. And then pour that over the meatballs. Bake for 20 minutes, uncover and bake an additional 15 to 20 minutes. Drizzle the glaze over the meatballs and serve.
So you're going to put the glaze over the meatballs before you bake them and then use more of it once you're done.
Yep.
So it sounds really good. The easy ham balls.
Yes.
So you still have the traditional ham, but you're doing something a little bit different with it. So that sounds like fun.
I think I might make my meatballs ahead of time and then
That's another
put those in the crock pot and make the glaze after that and put that on top and then just let them be in the crock pot.
How long would that probably take then if you're going to do those in the crock pot as opposed to putting them in the oven?
Well, I would still bake them in the oven.
Oh, okay.
I'd still bake the meatballs.
Make them in the oven.
Bake
them in the oven and then put them in the crock pot.
And then put them in the crock pot, add the glaze, and then they're just sitting there.
Just let them sit there on low or keep warm.
Yeah, keep warm until everybody's ready.
All right.
Yeah.
Very good. And it'll make the house smell wonderful.
Yes.
In the meantime, to go along with the ham balls, we've got sweet corn pasta salad.
Yes. So this was something different, and I was like, ooh, that sounds yummy. So 1 10-ounce box of elbow macaroni, 1 10-ounce bag of frozen sweet corn, 1 tablespoon of butter, 1 tablespoon of olive oil, 1/2 small onion chopped, 1/2 red onion chopped, and 1 cup of cheddar cheese. And then for the salad dressing, it's just 1/2 cup of mayo, 1/3 cup of sour cream, 2 teaspoons of fresh lemon juice, 1/2 teaspoon of ground clove, 1 teaspoon of garlic powder, and salt and pepper to taste. So add your mayo, your sour cream, your garlic powder, salt, and pepper in a bowl. Mix well, keep it covered, and allow the flavors to come together in the fridge. Then bring a large pot of water to boil. Add some salt and the pasta. Cook for about 8 to 10 minutes. Heat a skillet. I use cast iron.
Mm-hmm.
Add your oil and your butter. Pour your corn kernels into the heated skillet. Season with salt and pepper. Cook for 5 to 10 minutes. That's just roasting up those and bringing out that flavor of that corn.
Yep.
The corn is done. When small brown spots appear on the corn, let the pasta and corn both cool a bit. Then add the onion in your prepared dressing and toss well and combine. Refrigerate until ready to serve.
Yeah, that's a good, like, springtime kind of pasta salad recipe that would work good for Easter.
I love roasted corn.
You could do that anytime.
Yes.
So, yeah, absolutely. And then for dessert, and this is one of those traditional Easter desserts, a carrot cake. But a carrot cake roll.
So, like, instead of a pumpkin roll, it's a carrot cake
roll. It's a carrot cake roll.
Yes. All right. So, a carrot cake mix, 6 large eggs, 1/4 cup of vegetable oil, and 1/4 cup of water. Then your filling is 1/2 cup of butter, room temperature, 3 cups of powdered sugar, 1/2 package of cream cheese softened, 1 to 4 tablespoons of heavy cream, and garnish with powdered sugar if desired. I do cinnamon and sugar because I don't like the powdered sugar on top of my rolls. So I do cinnamon and sugar mixture.
Okay.
So preheat your oven to 350 degrees. Spray a 10 by 15 by 1 inch jelly roll pan with nonstick cooking spray. Cut parchment paper to fit the pan. Spray the parchment paper with some more cooking spray. Add the cake mix, oil, and water in a large mixing bowl. Beat on low for 30 seconds. Then with a rubber spatula, scrape down your sides and the bottom of your mixing bowl just to make sure all that powder and stuff from your mix comes up. And then increase the speed to medium for 1 minute. Pour the batter onto the prepared pan. You may not need all of the batter. Evenly spread the batter throughout the pan. Bake at 350 degrees for 15 to 20 minutes. Insert a toothpick into the center of the cake to make sure it's done. Or like I do my little thumbprint or fingerprint. And if it comes right back up, then it's ready to go. Place a sheeted parchment paper on your countertop. Toss that with your powdered sugar, or like I said, I do my cinnamon and sugar on the parchment paper. Once baked, remove from the oven and promptly turn the cake out onto the prepared sheet of parchment paper. Quickly roll the cake with the parchment paper. So your parchment paper is going to be in your roll. So you're going to roll that all up and then let that sit tight and cool down for a couple hours. Then while that's doing that, add your make your filling, your cream cheese and butter in a mixer using an electric mixer to cream your cheese and butter. Beat for 3 to 4 minutes. Keep beating the mixer and add in the powdered sugar 1 cup at a time. If the filling, if it feels like the filling is too thick, add some milk or some heavy cream.
Okay.
Just to thin it out a little bit. Don't thin it out too much because then that's like
runny.
A frosting.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
That's
yeah,
like,
exactly.
It's like a frosting. Yeah. It's thick. So then once your cake is cool, then unroll that again, add your frosting, your cream cheese mixture, spread that. And then you're going to roll it back up without the parchment paper. Then you're going to roll that back up and then spread the filling. Make sure the filling covers all 4 corners. Roll it back up. And then I do mine tightly. I put some plastic wrap around it tightly.
Okay. To kind of hold it.
Yeah, to hold it and put it in the refrigerator for at least 2 to 3 hours before serving.
Yeah,
or overnight.
Okay,
yes.
There you go. So the carrot cake roll for dessert, the sweet corn pasta salad, and of course the easy ham balls for kind of a different, unique Easter dinner.
Different Easter ideas.
I like that.
The family doesn't always want ham.
Yeah. So. Something a little bit
bit different.
All right. All of those recipes are posted on the Kyra's Kitchen Facebook page, correct?
Yep, they're all there.
At Kyra's Kitchen WFIN on Facebook. And we have that linked up at goodmornings.net as well. My wife, Kyra, thanks very much.
You're welcome.
And that will finish up our podcast for today. I want to thank all of our guests for joining us on the program. Of course, remember, you can get more information about all of the topics that we talk about each and every day on the show at our webpage, and that is goodmornings.net. Coming up Monday on the program, with 1 week to go, local officials making final preparations for the total solar eclipse. Mayor Christina Mern will join us with an overview of everything residents need to know about what's coming. So until Monday morning, that is Good Mornings for this morning. Now that you've had a good morning, Go on out, make it a good day, a great weekend. Happy Easter. We'll catch you back here next week.